generally arrive because they've been encouraged through a talent in drawing or love of painting or fine gift of color to think of themselves as potential artists. In many places, they are told that these gifts are now obsolete or irrelevant to what needs to be done, which is to align oneself with the latest fashion as quickly as possible, and to learn to parody long before they even know what's being parodied. It's not surprising that students in reaction often tend towards conservatism. I know of a school where a group meets almost on a clandestine basis to draw from dusty plaster casts of ancient statues. And I heard that actually some of you have even done that, but not because you felt the need of it, but because a professor suggested it. But in the other school, the students did it almost in reaction to what the faculty wanted of them. I'm not really pleased at this, but I am pleased at the sign that the climate in art seems to be changing once again. I think it's too early to applaud. Along with the newly dusted off plaster casts, all kinds of other discards are being brought out of the closet. The academic art of the late 19th century, with its slick, finicky surface and overstuffed attitudinizing, old-fashioned allegories, romantic nonsense, dredged up from overexcited Germans. And in the painting of the moment, thank you, Michael. In the painting of the moment, a huge amount of dull deadhead realism characterized by a kind of deadpan enumeration of uninteresting scraps of information, like shop window reflections, cereal boxes, broken motorbikes, and theater marquees. Then there is neo-expressionism, the latest thing, in which the game seems to be who can be most vehement. But vehement about what? Vehement about vehemence, of course. No, the swing of the pendulum, although it does allow the traditional artist to show himself in public again, still can't be said to have solved our confusion. This can only be solved by the long and careful examination of all art, avant-garde or traditional, which could lead after a while to distinctions of quality. It's never been easy for those alive and contending in any period to distinguish what was mainstream art from momentary side issues and tangential concerns. Yet one thing emerges over time. There is such a thing as mainstream art. No period, no matter how chaotic, what finally emerges is some overriding concern which sums up and tidies up the apparent disorder. This synthesis is not a conquest by the avant-garde working at the extremes of art, nor is it the slow accretion of numberless slowpoke traditionalists, each bringing his or her little piece of the puzzle, but it's a combination of both. Yesterday's restlessness becomes today's stability, and today's fragile stability engenders the restlessness which will make me nervous tomorrow and delight some of you. Thank you very much.
You tested your ideas by iron standards. Can you explain what standards are?
Well, I mean, what I said is that my standard is, does it make me a stronger artist or not? In other words, does it help me as a powerful force in the art world? You know, every artist starts out with the idea, I think. I mean, I would think that every serious artist starts out with the idea that he's going to make the most important art of the moment, you know. And I certainly start out with that idea. Now, any idea that I have has to be tested against that. Does it help that stance, or does it hurt it? See? That's all I'm trying to say. I don't think I've explained it very well. Maybe it'll come out better under some other question. Any other question? Yes.
I commend the first part of your lectures. describe the difference between avant-garde art and art that relied more on past precedents. But in the latter part of the lecture, you seem to disregard the purpose of avant-garde art, of advancing art as a whole. If art were to be relied, if all present art were to be totally devoid of innovation, then art would move on. We live in a society that is progressive. So art would become discontinuous with time and no longer express the social.
Gee, I think you misunderstood me. I mean, you know, naturally, I told you my bias, and I gave you my catalogs in order to give pictorial basis for my bias, which is in favor of traditional art. And I think people have to stand up and make a strong, not defense, it doesn't need to be defended, but make a strong presentation for traditional art, which needs to be constantly present in everybody's mind. In fact, I went around this afternoon in the graduate department and I talked to students. And the thing that shocked me, was the ignorance about the art of the past and the figures of the past among candidates for a master's degree in art. I mean, it's as though all you have to do is just paint pictures and everything's all right. Your pictures aren't going to have much meaning unless they either grade against traditional art or else advance traditional art. The avant-gardist, I mean, the reason that I talked so long about Alan Kaprow, is I put him within the context of his constraints, you see? Constraints that he couldn't get along with the world, he couldn't get along with his teachers, he couldn't get along with the family. For him, the tradition really was a terrible weight, and he had to fight against it. For me, on the other hand, the tradition is a source of strength, and I tried to you know, in my lecture, give reasons why it was that. And I don't for a moment deny the avant-gardist's importance. What I tried to show in the lecture is what its importance really was. Naturally, my prejudices came out in the context of the lecture. Against what I consider unsubstantiated claims for the art of this moment, you know. And I also don't believe that only avant-garde art is progressive. I think good traditional art is extremely progressive too. You know, and that's another thing that I tried to bring out in this lecture. So, I mean, if you didn't like my second half of my lecture so much as the first, it's probably because I didn't make you laugh. I don't know. I mean, I tried really to deal with the issues in it. Yes?
I think I disagree with you on your point that art has to either grade against tradition or strengthen tradition. I don't think that's true. It might be true in your book, but I think I disagree with it. I think probably the only thing that the avant-garde is lacking today is that culture, if not in a petri dish, but just throughout the world, history that traditional art has. But I mean, it just hasn't been here long enough to establish a tradition of its own. And I think in 100 years.
Oh, but it has. It has. I tried to show in the lecture how it inevitably does, because it gets absorbed. It gets absorbed, and if it's any good, it almost automatically gets absorbed into the mainstream after two generations. I think you're copping out when you're saying that. I think there is a tradition of avant-garde art at this moment.
I think so too.
Yeah.
No,
it doesn't have a tradition of its own. It's part of the tradition. You know, it goes all the way back in an unbroken
threat to Delacroix.
So what's wrong with somebody jumping in right now without negating the whole?
What's wrong with it is that you're jumping in without feeling the weight of it, feeling either the weight of it or else feeling the sustaining power of it. You're jumping in just, you know, there was a term that Marcuse invented. It was, what was his term, Peter? Tolerance, repressive tolerance or something like that, or, you know, where he said that people who don't give you any resistance are your enemies, even though if you're trying to be a revolutionary against resistance, you know, you're just as bad as not being a revolutionary. And I think the tradition has to be felt as a resistance, you know, by painters who want to jump in at some point. If you don't know it, it can't be a resistance. So therefore, like, what you end up having to do is set up your own tradition, which might come from, let's say, comic strips or mass products or children's book illustrations. What other things have people taken, you know, to create a new tradition of, you know, in the absence of the larger tradition of Western art? And try to make art out of that. It's very difficult. I think it's going to end up being very thin soup.
What's the importance of it being of a resistance, though? Why does there have to be that resistance? Why can't it be an acceleration of what's already there?
Because that's how the drama in a picture comes about. Maybe I'm talking like a Marxist, but I think you have to kind of feel the antithesis in order to come up with a synthesis. If you just start in, somebody, maybe one of you scholars, support me on this, or else tell me I'm all wet. No, clearly I'm out here in the pond all by myself. Sink or swim.
Well,
yes.
Are you kind of saying when you think an artist has to sort of recapitulate Western art history to get? I mean, do you have to kind of begin?
I don't think you have to begin, and you don't have to recapitulate Western art history in order to do something useful, but you have to have a sense of it somehow, you know. You have to have a. It's got to be in your mind as a. You know, in the same way in which a physicist would know physics. An artist has to know art, you know. And what is there to know about art? Well, other paintings. What other paintings are there? The tradition. I mean, otherwise, the only thing that you know is like what's in last month's art news. And that's pretty pitiful, you know, if that's the only thing that you're starting with, you know, because that's already been attenuated and thinned out and specialized, and it's not really a very good place to start. I think if you start with a greater weight of the tradition burdening you or sustaining you, you have a much better start. Yes? We all are.
Maybe problematize everything with the crossing of the oceans.
Well, you may even have something else. You may have an Oriental tradition in addition to that. That you'd be so rich if you had that. It'd be wonderful.
Right. But what I'm saying is that part of the problem seems could lie in the difficulty of knowing what it is when you bring a tradition across the ocean, whether it be from Asia or from Europe, and put it down and say for like maybe some the
the way a student here today might think, mm-hmm. a student born in America that might have, coming up with a public high school education that he or she is going to get in America.
Big liability, terrible trouble.
And
go ahead.
That's part of the sort of problem.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're here. You're trying to get over that, right? You know? I mean, it's sort of like, look for, you see, this too much is made of this thing that you're here in America and I came over from Europe and so forth. Baloney. Like, here we are, we're all speaking English. Now, we didn't invent English, you know. Now, there's some people who know how to speak English because they've read literature and they know words and they've got a vocabulary. And then there's other people who say, you know, man, it's like, dig, man, you know, and so forth. And that's their conversation, you know. And I think that a lot of art is being done today, including some here in this school, which is, dig, man, you know, man, you know. And I don't think that's profiting from the tradition, and it's not profiting from the resources that you have available. You know, if you went to a impoverished educational antecedents, now is the time to correct it. You know, you've all got a chance. You're here, they got a big library, they got a lot of intelligent people among your fellow students and among your teachers. You know, catch up. Now's the time. Arnold?
It's not too easy to define exactly what tradition is. I think a lot of pain today that looks represented, that has this kind of figurative, might be called traditional by some.
Well,
it's
I'm like a...
whether it is tradition.
Right. I managed to shoot a couple of arrows at that too. I tried, you know, but I think just because something is figurative doesn't mean it has anything to do with the tradition of art. I mean, I think the tradition of art is something that has to do with the spirit. It doesn't have to do with enumeration of a bunch of objects. And wonderful abstract painting is very, in fact, one of the things that's terrible about me handing out these catalogs to you, you're all going to get the wrong idea. You're all going to, all that is the most intelligent ones among you, except the ones, most intelligent ones among you. You're all going to get the idea, well, here's this deadhead landscape painter who's talking about the tradition. Naturally, he's going to have to talk this way because he's got to have some rationale for doing that kind of painting that we all know is superseded by abstract art and by pop art and by body art and by God knows what. And I wish I were, you know, for the occasion, an abstract painter. In a way, I am. If you look at the pictures carefully, you'll see that I am an abstract painter. Because it has nothing to do with whether you paint foolish landscapes. I'm embarrassed about being a landscape painter. You know, it's not my proudest thing that I do. I'm proud of being a good painter under the aegis of being a landscape painter, you know. But I don't think it has any traditional, has nothing to do, it's not to be equated. I'm glad you made that point. It's not to be equated with being a representational painter. Being an intelligent painter, being a painter who deals with structures and with the spirit, that has to do with tradition. Yes?
Could there be some way that you can talk about an avant-garde tradition? I mean, when you're talking about like a Oriental tradition or a European tradition, couldn't it be that maybe society, our culture has changed so much that the European tradition is no longer meaningful to people,
Yeah, I think that's possible. I mean, in fact, there's some art, you know, art that's being advanced now that I wish did have, I mean, it comes out of nowhere. It seems to me to be going to a place that I don't know where it wants to go to. And I'm really left at sea with it, you know. And maybe what you're saying is true, that it has to do with something that's been born just yesterday, full grown out of the head of Zeus, and we're totally, you know, most of us here, or maybe us old folks, you know, we don't have a clue. It's possible, but it's unlikely. Because take a jazz, you know, jazz has a tradition, goes back to African music, you know. And the closer it goes, the closer it relates to African music, usually the better it is. You know, not that it has to, that African music is the best that there ever was, I'm not saying that. But if you can see the connecting thread between, you know, the jazz and its origin, that's what I'm saying. You've got to be able to see some kind of connecting thread between the recent manifestations and the origin. You know. So I mean, like, on the face of it, I grant you the possibility of what you're talking about, but I don't believe it. Yeah.
I want to comment just a minute ago. You mentioned something about being embarrassed or not proud of being a landscape painter. I don't know whether you were talking about your actual style, whether you're embarrassed of a particular painting that you do, or whether you're just embarrassed of the fact that you're a landscape painter. I saw your book 15 months ago. I love this stuff. I think it's great.
Thank you.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that? What prompts you? I mean, I see the abstract in it, and I see a synthesis of different things happening in your work.
Well, I tell you, I'm embarrassed, maybe too strong a word. I paint landscape faute de mieux, you know that French phrase, because I got nothing else to do. You know, I'd love to be a religious painter. You know, I'd love to be Fra Angelico, who when he painted, hi there, and a new student in Cornell, when before he painted the Madonna, he prayed, and when he painted Crucifixion, he cried. You know, nothing that I'm painting would either cause me to pray, or nothing that I'm painting would cause me to cry.
Well, you must like what you're doing.
Oh, I love what I'm doing.
Yeah, I get something out. I'm sure.
No, I love what I'm doing, and I'm painting. I'm painting what I'm painting because it's the only thing I know how to do. You know, but on the other hand, I can certainly see the limitations of it. You know. Last question. Getting tired. Make it a good one. Yes.
I'd like to know, in your lecture, you were saying you get a spirit or some kind of passion. I want to know, could you talk more about passion in your work? And
the passion in my work.
The passion, do you get the passion from the educational experience, or is it both part of
your
educational experience
and doing
work?
I don't understand that question.
Passion, I mean,
you mean my impetus? The impulse to do my work?
That, as far as the aspect to the education, learning about the tradition, is that good?
Well, I mean, I'm learning about the tradition all the time. You know, I mean, every time, the same way to follow the analogy about the English language, every time you learn a new word, you're learning something about the tradition of your language,
right? Does that help to increase your passion for what you're doing?
I don't know, I think good breakfast helps me increase my passion for what I'm doing. I don't know. I really can't tell. I'm not trying to be glib. I just don't know the answer, you know. Thank you very much.